The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth.
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the herb.
Normal Show Live! Marijuana Nation! Now, here's your host... Normal's outreach coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Monday, November 8th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more being podcast as the Normal Daily Audio Stash, available now on iTunes and at our blog, stash.normal.org. Followed by another hour, a live hour of Toker Talk Radio you can only get here at Stick'em, starting at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, followed then by replays of this first hour. So you got a three-hour block here of great new informative marijuana news and content every weekday here at Normal Show Live. Joining us from our virtual studio in beautiful Grastoria, Oregon, is my good friend, our newsreader, and my quarter sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Happy Monday, everybody.
Happy Monday, Carrie. How are you doing this fine day?
Good. I woke up this morning and it really hit me like a ton of bricks. It's November now. I mean, it's November.
It's getting cold out there, but it's been a good November for me so far because I'm enjoying blowouts by my Boise State Broncos and my Green Bay Packers this weekend. So football-wise,
November's always the best football month.
Yeah, couldn't turn out any better for me. Carrie brings us our news headlines right here at the very beginning of the show. So what do we got in the news today, Carrie?
Well, since it's just the first Monday after the election, we've got some more fallout, the good, the bad, the ugly. We're going to talk about election results coming out of Massachusetts, also coming out of Colorado, and then some fallout of a different kind up in Seattle. If you remember last week, we covered that terrible SWAT raid on a guy with two sad little plants.
Yeah. Okay, we'll get to that news. Also, I have some updates on the still-to-be-determined election results, both in Arizona with Proposition 203, the Medical Marijuana Initiative, and in California with the very important attorney general's race between Steve Cooley and Kamala Harris. We'll have the latest updates in our hemp headlines. Also on today's show, we get you daily toker tunes from Roots Monday, all of the great music that led to the great music we have now. And Carrie brings us that music as well. Today we'll be listening to some blues from the Manish Boys. Then at half past the hour, we begin our segment on This Month in Normal. At the top of the month, we always have Normal's executive director, Alan St. Pierre, fresh from his interview on CNN this weekend. He'll be talking about the 2010 election results and what that bodes for Normal and other drug reformers moving forward to 2012. And then at the end of the show, a little bit of radical ranting. I'm going to talk about a double system of justice for the rich and for the poor and how we use the anger at that to help gain ground in the fight for marijuana legalization. All that in your calls in hour two on Toker Talk Radio. It's Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Georgia, Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
You want to legalize it? Call your congressman today. 202-224-3121. It's free, it's easy, and you don't even have to give your name, just your zip code, and they'll hook you up to your congressman. Call 202-224-3121 and tell Congress you support marijuana legalization.
Liberate your mind, liberate your mind, liberate your mind, that's what you got to do.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's NORML News with Cannabis Carry.
The election news in the West might have been less than many cannabis activists had hoped, but other election results around the country have given rise to hope. In Massachusetts, voters in more than a dozen districts changed local laws that will loosen restrictions on marijuana. Cannabis activists in the state have been busy placing 18 advisory questions on the ballot in an effort to open up the discussion of overhauling dated marijuana laws. Half of the questions dealt with the issue of medical marijuana and the other half with outright legalization, asking questions about taxing and regulating. The results were even more supportive than expected, with passing the questions from 54% of support for and up to 70% in favor in some districts. The largest district that had a marijuana question on their ballot was the 1st Middlesex and Norfolk Senate District, including Brooklyn, Newton, and parts of Wellesley. The question that voters were asked was, quote, shall the state senator from this district be instructed to vote in favor of legalization that would allow the state to regulate the taxation, cultivation, and sale of marijuana to adults? 63% of the voters backed legalization. And the good news didn't end there. Other cities like Salem, Swampscott, Marblehead, Hudson, Maynard, Dover, Nantucket, Deerfield, Amherst, Lincoln, and others all backed legalizing cannabis for adults. Although those cities and towns that were allowed to vote for marijuana policy questions only accounted for about 12% of the state's population, it shows strong support in areas that might have been seen less favorable to cannabis law reform than cities that would most likely vote in support but did not see it on the ballot this time around. Ballot initiatives in the 24 states that allow that process have seen the most successful have been the most successful reforming cannabis laws. According to Alan St. Pierre of NORML, the voters are ahead of the legislators when it comes to marijuana legalization. Massachusetts voters have been very progressive in cannabis law reform in the eastern United States. The voters there passed a 2008 ballot initiative to decriminalize possession in the state of less than an ounce of cannabis. Instead of a criminal record and the threat of jail time, the penalties were reduced to a civil infraction with a $100 fine, easing the burden of a criminal record for thousands of citizens. Massachusetts has yet to recognize medical marijuana, but will most likely see some kind of medical program initiative bill being pushed in 2012.
I think there's going to be really good results as Massachusetts moves forward because we've got great grassroots activists on the ground working for that. Let's give big props to MassCan Marvel out there in the Massachusetts, in Boston, in the whole state, working at a local level here to convince people that we need to do something about prohibition. And they were successful getting a 2-to-1 margin of the vote in the decriminalization initiative because they laid the groundwork before that with all these local public policy questions. They got people used to the idea of addressing marijuana on the ballot and addressing it in a positive manner. Now, as we learned from Prop 19, there is a whole big difference between the vague concept of legalization versus when you start putting details on it, how much support you can get. But I do think these results bode well for the state of Massachusetts being on the vanguard of marijuana legalization in 2012. Now, speaking of results from the 2010 election, I do have some updates on a couple of the races, and it doesn't look good in either of them. Looking at Prop 203 in Arizona, they are still counting some of the provisional ballots and some of the absentee ballots, but this is news from azfamily.com, which is reporting as of this morning. General election officials are still counting ballots from last week's election. It looks like Prop 203, the medical marijuana legalization, is going to fail. As Javier Soto explains, the no votes are leading, which means if the election were finalized today, Prop 203 would be shot down. There are, however, still about 150,000 ballots to be counted. Now, when election night had finished, we had reported Prop 203 losing by about 6,700 votes out of 1.3 million votes cast. As they started counting some of the absentee and provisional ballots, they found that lead had that deficit had decreased to about 3,000, still losing by 3,000. But as of today, they found another 500 or so votes that had gone toward an advantage of 500 or so votes for the no side, and now they're about 4,000 votes behind. It's not looking good for Prop 203. Now, looking into California's Attorney General race, when we had first closed shop on our election night coverage, it looked like Steve Cooley was going to win that race. As more election returns came in from some of the more urban areas in Northern California, Kamala Harris, the San Francisco DA, had pulled ahead slightly. Now, the latest news that we get from 89.1 KUOR, Southern California Public Radio, says that the ballot counting continues Monday in the race for California's Attorney General. Steve Cooley, the Los Angeles DA, leads Kamala Harris by nearly 37,000 votes out of an estimated 2 million ballots. Now, they are still counting late mail-in ballots and some of the provisional ballots issued on the day of election. And the counties that have to be counted, Los Angeles County has the most counting to do with about 400,000 of those ballots to count. Orange County has 230,000, San Diego 240,000, and Riverside close to 80,000. Important to understand, those counties are all in Southern California, and it's likely to, you could likely believe they would probably tilt towards Steve Cooley. Now, in an election in California, the loser can ask for a recount, but the loser has to pay for that recount unless they win. If they win, then the counties take care of that recount. The representatives from the Harris and the Cooley campaigns are closely watching the process. They cannot challenge any individual ballots unless there's a recount. So the worst possible nightmare, Prop 19 losing, and Steve Cooley, the marijuana-hating Prop 215 abolishing DA from Los Angeles, may just be your new Attorney General.
Colorado cannabis activists have already launched two separate campaigns to legalize marijuana for adults in the 2012 election. Undeterred by the recent failure of California's Prop 19 to legalize marijuana for adults in that state, Colorado marijuana activist groups are pushing ahead and hope that it will be their state that legalizes marijuana first. Mason Tavert, founder of Safer Alternative for Enjoyable Recreation, the group behind a voter initiative in Denver to make marijuana possession the lowest law enforcement priority, thinks Colorado is ready. On Wednesday, right after the election, he said that his group, Safer and Sensible Colorado, will work together to let voters decide whether to make marijuana legal for adults 21 years and older, and to regulate cannabis like the state currently regulates alcohol consumption, possession, and sales. Laura Kiro, an outreach coordinator for the organization The Cannabis Therapy Institute, along with other cannabis groups, have also launched a campaign last week called Legalize 2012. They hope to mobilize Coloradans to get active in cannabis law reform now, although the group is not allowed to gather signatures for a voter initiative until early in 2012. Colorado is one of the easiest and cheapest states for groups to get questions for voters onto their ballots, with only 76,000 signatures needed from the state's 3.2 million registered voters. The trick isn't to get legalization effort on the ballot, but to get the right one on that will satisfy the state's many pro-cannabis groups. One of the failures of California's Prop 19 was that many pro-cannabis groups refused to get behind behind the proposition, and other pro-cannabis activists actively campaigned against it. Groups behind the latest effort to legalize in Colorado hope to sidestep those issues by working with as many groups as possible for input into the effort. Brian Vicente, the executive director of Sensible Colorado, hopes that the different groups that have struck out to wage a legalization effort can combine their efforts into one well-supported campaign. Vicente's group was tracking the failure of as many as 29 municipalities that chose to ban medical marijuana businesses, including Aurora, Colorado's third largest city. But it wasn't all bad news for Colorado cannabis activists. In last Tuesday's election, the groups claimed a victory in El Paso County that was voting on a ban that would have closed more than 100 cannabis businesses.
Well, I wish all the folks in Colorado good luck with this. I do believe the people in Colorado are ready to have the legalization debate, but I do fear that problem in the I Gots Mine segment. You know, Colorado's got a very significant cannabis business industry, got a lot of people who have made their living by selling to dispensaries, and a lot of dispensaries have made a lot of money the way the system is now. The medical marijuana doctors are making a lot of money the way the system is now. I hope they can overcome the difficulties we found in California trying to appease those who have a vested interest in the status quo. I'll be keeping my eyes on it, but tell you what, if I were a betting man, I'd pick Massachusetts over Colorado.
Seattle's Mayor Mike McGlynn will sit down with top law enforcement officials from King County today to discuss the way that Seattle police are enforcing marijuana laws. Mayor McGlynn has come out in support of legalizing cannabis and has said the recent police raid of a military vet who had only a small amount of marijuana just shows how inconsistent the laws are in the matter. On October 25th, a SWAT team burst through the apartment door of a 50-year-old Will Landowski, who is a legal medical marijuana patient. After breaking Ms. Landowski's door down, shoving him to the floor, and ransacking his apartment, they could only come up with two very small marijuana plants in his bedroom. The officers who searched had a warrant and realized that the tenant had a legitimate medical marijuana card, so they left without making an arrest. They did come back later and fix the man's broken door. The Seattle Police Department has said that they were following city policy. Seattle Police Department spokesman Sean Whitcomb said that the officers in the case had no reason to consider Initiative 75, the 2003 measure that Seattle voters approved to make arresting and jailing adults for possession of personal amounts of marijuana the department's lowest law enforcement priority. He said that the Landowski case wasn't deemed a possession case. Mayor McGlynn would like more of a clarification on cases like these. McGlynn says that I-75 should work on a practical level and reflect more of the public's changing attitude toward marijuana. He says the public intent of the initiative needs to influence how officials think about policies regarding marijuana enforcement. McGlynn has also asked Assistant Police Chief Jen Pugel to review all marijuana investigations when officers are seeking a search warrant to give them greater scrutiny and determine whether there are other methods that police could use. Now, although they didn't find any illegal marijuana in the incident of Mr. Landowski, in that very same week, officers found more than 600 mature plants and 70 pounds of packaged illegal marijuana in a home in Renton. Because of federal patient privacy laws, there isn't a state database of medical marijuana users available to the police. With no way to check to see if Will Landowski was a medical marijuana patient and no access to his power bill, since power was included in his rent and could not be accessed by the unit, officers could only go on a complaint and the presence of the odor of marijuana coming from his apartment. Ian Goodhue, the deputy chief of staff to King County Prosecutor Dan Sattenberg, said that police have the duty to investigate criminal activity. Sometimes they find criminal activity and sometimes they don't, but they need to do their jobs more effectively.
Well, really, though, this is a question about the appropriate level of response to any cannabis case. You know, this notion that they broke into the guy's house and they force him to the ground and they come in with violent, overwhelming force, that was wrong just because he was a patient? No, that was wrong because he's a human effing being. That's why it was wrong. We got to take a look at this and why we allow our SWAT teams to be in charge of prosecuting warrants for people involved with marijuana or drugs. I think they've got this idea that it's some sort of Tony Montana situation. Everybody's going to stand up, say hello to my little friend, and start shooting the cops. But that just isn't the case. Out of all of the drug warrants that are served by police in the United States, the rate of shooting incidences of death amongst cops is 1 in 3. 350,000. They are more likely to go out and get in a wreck in the squad car on the way to the warrant than they are to be harmed or killed by the people they're serving the warrants on. The reason they use these kind of tactics is it's about shock and awe. It's about frightening and terrorizing the population to not even consider getting involved with marijuana because of the deadly danger and terrible crime and violence involved with it, when most of the crime and violence involved with this is being instigated by the police officers bursting into our homes in the first place. And with news like that, it means you gotta kind of relax and take a break. It's 4:20 out there on the Eastern Seaboard, 20 after all the way across this planet. Sit back, enjoy a good one. We're back after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
...76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers. And nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and coworkers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Roots Monday, our celebration of the music that evolved into the popular modern music of today. We pick the best of blues, country, folk, and jazz with a 420 feel and serve it up for you every Monday. Brought to you by Cannabis Carry in Astoria, Oregon, and CannabisFantastic.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
22 after the hour, and one of my favorite things about Monday, if you can have a favorite thing about Monday, is getting this dose of Roots Monday music. We rejoin Cannabis Carry up in Grastoria, Oregon. Carry, what's on tap for today's Daily Toker Tune?
Well, on Roots Monday, I like to cover folk and jazz and country, but I thought on this Monday after the election, it was time for some blues. We've heard from the Manish Boys, who are our Toker guests today. They're no strangers to the Stash. We've had them as our musical guests twice in the past. The group is actually an ever-evolving group of world-class musicians from independent record label Delta Groove. Now, Delta Groove was originally brought into existence for the sole purpose of releasing the music of the Manish Boys, founded by Randy Chotkoff. So since then, Delta Groove has grown as a record company. They have a full roster of talented blues musicians. They've got a growing catalog of well-received releases. And as the record label grew, so did this group, who has borrowed many of the amazing blues musicians that have found themselves first at the record label and then featured on the latest Manish Boys CD. Today's Toker Tune is called California Blues. It comes from their 2007 album, Big Plans, and features Chicago singer Bobby Jones wailing through an original shuffle by bassist Tom Levy. Founding member Randy Chotkoff adds some Jimmy Reed-ish high-registered harp in this moody reworking of Howlin' Wolf his Memphis recording of this song. The result is a slow drag blues version that also features guitarist Kirk Fletcher on lead and Mitch Kazmer on harp. Now, I thought that a blues song to ease the sting of last week's election and one called California Blues might be just the thing to get us through this first Monday after the election.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. It's the Manish Boys with some California Blues.
Thank you. yeah. That's a place I won't live. California. That's a place I won't live. I'm going to California. I'm gonna live on Beverly Hills, California. I'm going down to live. Cause I'm gonna get old one day. California, that's a fine place to live.
That song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care.
It's 420 somewhere.
Time to look at Normal's Cannabis Community Calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. Tonight, Monday, November 8th, the Southwest Michigan Compassion Club is meeting at the American Legion Hall in Buchanan, Michigan. Anyone in the Southwest Michigan area interested in learning about medical marijuana, how to become a patient or a caregiver, please join us. There'll be a legalization discussion at Swift Hall 808 at the UC Cincinnati in Ohio, sponsored by Miami Valley Normal. Madison Normal in Wisconsin will be meeting Monday night at the Wilmar Center in Madison, Wisconsin. Tuesday, November 9th, there's a downtown residence council at the library in Cincinnati, Ohio, a marijuana legalization impact featuring Chris Smith. Check that out through MiamiValleyNormal.org. There's a weekly medicating event taking place at the Phoenix Cafe in Hazel Park, Michigan. The Greater Torch Lake Area Compassion Club in Alden, Michigan will be meeting at the Alden Library. And the Kalamazoo Area Compassion Club is meeting at Charlie's Place in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Also in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Hemp TV is on the air. Call 505-880-0666 for tickets to the show. On Wednesday, November 10th, the Grand Traverse Compassion Connection meeting is meeting in Traverse City, Michigan. Check out gtcompassionconnection.org for more information. And to get information on all of these events, including email addresses, names, websites, maps, and more, check out Normal's Cannabis Community Calendar at norml.org/calendar.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Hello, this is Webb Hubble. Life insurance is now available for responsible marijuana smokers. For years, responsible marijuana smokers have not been able to access affordable life insurance products. Normal uniquely supports cannabis consumers. Two carriers have already agreed to offer all of their traditional life insurance products at all levels without excluding individuals who smoke marijuana responsibly. Help Normal and help yourself. If you've been declined for life insurance, are paying above market premiums, or simply want to know what now may be available in the way of insurance for marijuana smokers, contact me at info@mclaughlinonline.com or simply call me at 202-293-5566.
Founded in 1970, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws is the oldest, largest, and most popular lobby of cannabis users in the world. From our Washington, D.C. offices, we lobby our federal government. And from our chapters nationwide, we lobby our state and local governments to end the war on American citizens who choose to use cannabis responsibly. We take you now to our nation's capital for a visit with Executive Director Alan St. Pierre and a look at this month in Normal.
31 after the hour, and it's time for this month in Normal, where we visit with Normal's executive director, Alan St. Pierre, in Washington, D.C. And we are very interested in talking to Alan today about the 2010 marijuana election results. We had four major statewide elections and all sorts of public policy questions in states all over the United States. So we bring Alan in on the line. Alan, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Russ. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You know, a lot of folks here watched our live coverage and heard you speak there in Oaksterdam headquarters. And it was kind of a sad night seeing all the election returns coming back from four different states where marijuana ballot measures failed to gain a majority of the vote. What's your take-home lesson from these election results?
Well, the flip answer is that reformers should not be whistling by the graveyard and thinking that marijuana legalization is a guaranteed outcome here, because clearly when you get your clock clean like reformers did this time around, it should be instructive.
Yeah.
But I think the larger uptick is to look at each one of the states briefly and quickly, and that is in California, as briefly as one can, acknowledge that by, and some of this has been well vetted online through some of your analyses and some on Normal's regular blog page regarding that when we put too many things into an initiative that allows our opponents to attack them, that can be fairly problematic. Initiatives typically are sort of more like up and down votes on concepts than on regulatory concerns. And in California, I think strategically, it's noted that there was almost no real presence of the campaign in the Los Angeles basin, that almost everybody was working and concentrated out of the East Bay area. And there probably should have been a decampment about 30 days or so ago to get a couple dozen folks down to Los Angeles, because by only losing by a few percentage points down in Los Angeles, that could have helped in the macro. And then when we look upstate to the grow counties, well, we all know that there's a parochial reason why the growers tend to vote against it, but had reformers been up there to burn a little more shoe leather, get them to buy into the concept a little more, that too, a few percentage points in the favor of that up there could have got us to the majority in toto. So we can see that just with a concentration on a few different parts of the state, we could have got to a majority even with warts and all, shall we say.
Is this a question of execution or of resources? Is this something the Prop 19 people would have wanted to do or knew to do but just didn't have the money to pull it off?
Definitely a matter of resources. Had they received some of the large resources they got in the last 2 weeks of the campaign, had they received that back in July and August, I think it would have been self-evident for them to head down to the greater Los Angeles area to have a presence down there. So I think it was a classic example of resources coming in way, way too late, which only doctoral dissertations students and others will in the future be able to fully understand. Why did this money come from individuals who surely had no problem making these donations financially back in July and August, when there really could have been a huge difference made than dumping $500,000 onto a former's lap 4 days before the election, not really sure why they thought that was the best time to make those kind of donations.
Mm. Yeah, it does bear some more introspection on that point for sure.
You know, I mean, no one wants to, you know, begrudge anybody who makes those kind of incredible donations, but it'd be one thing if they say, hey, I didn't have the money, you know, I didn't have the money 2 months ago, but we're talking about folks who are sitting on top of billions of dollars in assets, and they're making available, you know, half of a percentage of their net worth available. So not quite understanding why that happened the way that it did. In Oregon, which you could probably speak better than I can on this as somebody who lives in Oregon, but I think the uptake from Oregon is that Oregon's medical marijuana laws, in many people's minds, are already some of the best in the country for self-preservation laws, such as they are. The threshold of the 24, 25 ounces of marijuana you can have, the fact that there is a reasonably good network of growers and primary caregivers connected up with patients, that, and considering that Oregon always looks down its nose to the south to see what California is doing, and with seeing California having this explosive, and in some people's view, sort of out-of-control medical marijuana laws, it was really easy for the Oregonian and others to really jump ugly on seeing an expansion of the program there beyond what it already is.
You know, looking at the other states, too, we have South Dakota, which had failed with medical marijuana in 2006 with 48% of the vote. This time they get 36%. Arizona had passed theirs in 96 with 65%. This time they're barely below 50. These precipitous drops in votes for medical marijuana initiatives that were either very much alike or even more restrictive than the initiatives that came beforehand. Mm-hmm. What do you take away from that?
Well, I think it is, as is the last point in what is a very well-written essay that you've placed up on Normal's front page about the lessons learned from this for reformers, and that's the last one, and that is that medical marijuana and legalization are inexplicably linked in a way that really can't be divorced. Not that they ever should have been or that they ever were intended to be something different, but it should be clear that we have probably reached our zenith. We've reached the high water mark on patients having access to whole smoke marijuana products after Governor Corzine signed the medical marijuana bill into law last year in New Jersey. That started a trend in the District of Columbia, Rhode Island, and we're certainly going to see in the pre-file bills that start coming in the door here at Normal in December in states like Illinois, Missouri, Tennessee, Minnesota. One can anticipate they're not going to be reintroducing the bills that had been brought up from 1998 to 2009, what I would call self-preservation laws, where patients could cultivate a small amount on their own of cannabis. No, all of that will now be removed. No home cultivation, very strict controls, everything right down to RFID tags on the plant, to GPS tracking of the car and the plant material from the plant place where it's grown to the point where it's consumed. Incredible amounts of government control are about to, if not have already started to take over the medical marijuana industry, and we're seeing this in Colorado as the prime example of a state that has a multi-billion dollar medical marijuana industry already underway, but only now the government passes regulations and taxation schemes that will try to, quote, control it. So I think that in the case of South Dakota and Arizona, along with Oregonians rejecting medical marijuana propositions this time out, is very indicative of that high water mark. Up till this point, if I'm not incorrect, we had won 29 out of 33 decriminal medical marijuana initiatives up until this past week. And so there could be an argument made that there has been overreach regarding medical marijuana, that the examples of California notably to the rest of the country have really soured individuals on the notion of compassion or the notion of of non-commercialization, because what we see in some of the states like California and Colorado and Montana notably is some, you know, pretty out-front retail commercialization when it's not clear that that's what the law ever intended or the voters therein in the years that these things passed. So it is clear that we are probably reached that zenith, and along with pharmaceuticalization looming, state and federal legislators are going to have a very hard time approving laws that allow people to grow their own medicine, or that it's going to be sold the way that it currently is being sold, unlike a pharmaceutical drug, in a world where pharmaceuticalized cannabis products, most notably the GW pharmaceutical flagship product, Sativex, when that product, which it is now four-fifths through the FDA process, is available here in the United States like it already is in Canada and in some parts of Europe, it is going to make it very hard to advance politically the notion of whole smoked access.
Mm. We're speaking with Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal and the Normal Foundation from Washington, D.C. And looking at the future now, you know, New Jersey's medical marijuana law got signed. It was the most restrictive that has been signed. And the outgoing Governor Corzine signed it very last second, almost as if he was afraid to put his name on it while he was still in office. The incoming Governor Christie is stonewalling on getting that law implemented. The incoming Governor Martinez in New Mexico has talked about severely restricting or changing a lot of the New Mexico medical marijuana laws. And, of course, we've got the possibility still of Attorney General Cooley in the state of California,
yes,
who doesn't believe,
yep,
in Prop 215. With all this political pressure building up and this pendulum swinging back on medical marijuana, how do we then convince people to go farther than that with legalization?
Well, I think, particularly when we're talking about medical access, and particularly to get buy-in from the medical community that is already out there today on the ground, in many cases thriving in the retail distribution of cannabis, and that is to make it absolutely clear that from the patient's point of view, not the producer's point of view necessarily, but from the patient's point of view, medical cannabis does not achieve the two most important goals of a medical patient. And it gets right down to this bumper sticker: best medicine, lowest costs. And as long as prohibition is in place, then a patient will never be able to access the best medicine for the lowest cost. They will be able to access medicine, and it will not be the best, and they will be able to access it, and they will be paying multiples more than what in the real world dried vegetable matter should cost. So absent those parochial concerns of the sellers and the cultivators, from a real-world economic point of view, from a patient's point of view, the buy-in should be made early into the process and the initiatives for legalization. That is, if they want best medicine, lowest cost, they can't get there with medical cannabis only.
Mm. And another question here, looking forward to, you know, moving forward here in the future. We're asking people to legalize marijuana, and the polls have been rising on this. We just, you know, documented the Gallup poll with 46% national, mm-hmm, support. The Angus Reid poll was as high as 52%. But there's something that we've noticed at Normal, and other folks have noticed this, what we call the parent trough, which is, you know,
yes,
from 18 to 35, people are for it, and from 50 on, they're for it. But when they're in that age range where they have teenage kids, they're very against, mm-hmm, legalizing, even if they themselves are tokers. What can we do in the next initiative rounds here in putting initiatives together to bring those parents of teenagers on board to the idea of legalization?
Well, one, we have to make it clear that when it is legalized, it is in fact controlled, where it is not today. Two, is that we have to acknowledge that these are completely legitimate concerns by parents, and so we have to embrace them fully. That doesn't mean having to, which I think is another cogent point in your essay today, in not having to capitulate entirely in trying to draft laws that so target 18 to 25-year-olds, but acknowledging that the youth, people who, shall we say, are 13 to 18 years old, they are a legitimate concern of parents regarding how cannabis is distributed, etc. So one is to acknowledge that their fears are legitimate, but if they want to enjoy the same type of controls that we have for things like alcohol and tobacco products and pharmaceuticals, that you don't get there with prohibition. We only get there through taxation and control. That's also an acknowledgement, Russ, that none of those other systems are necessarily perfect at all. When I give lectures at university and ask how many people have consumed alcohol before the legal age, we almost have 100% of the hands being raised. And so when I ask how many people have used a pharmaceutical drug when it was not actually prescribed to you, probably 20 to 35% or more of most university student audiences will raise their hands. And not even ask the question about tobacco. So we know that those systems are imperfect. So to another point that you raised today in your essay about what legalization can and cannot do, it is not a panacea. It will not make it so that parents will never have children who use marijuana. But what legalization can do is largely create the control mechanisms and the kind of, to use a bad pun here, normalization that we have seen regarding tobacco. In my lifetime, tobacco use has been cut in half. It's deadly, it's highly addictive, and yet it's reasonably ubiquitous. It is taxed, meaning the government is a partner in the distribution of it and acknowledges its commercial application. It is now dropping in use without any of the brutal, expensive mechanisms of the criminal justice system. We're not having to lie and propagandize to our children in the way that we have tried with the Partnership for Drug-Free America, just the title alone makes me laugh, or the DARE program in the public schools, that we have used credible and verifiable public health information to achieve this very important and laudable public health goal of reducing the incidence of smoking. So acknowledging to parents that we have models that work, but none of them work under prohibition.
Excellent. And one final chance here. We're speaking with Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal and the Normal Foundation in Washington, D.C. We call this segment This Month in Normal. So now looking forward to the next few weeks, what's on Normal's agenda? What will you be involved in, and how are we moving the ball forward?
Well, the ball is certainly being moved forward. Now we're in negotiations with affiliates and activists around the country about when do they want to launch their legalization initiative. And we're certainly trying to couch some of these to be held off till 2012 to get into the big tide of the presidential election year. But there are some who either are, for all right reasons, are impatient or see a unique opportunity potentially in not a mid-year election, what is called an off-year election, and actually push an initiative onto the ballot in this year. And what I'm speaking of notably are states like Colorado and Washington State. But I suspect that we're about to see a very large coming together of all the pro-reform groups to focus on 2012 on states like California, Colorado, Oregon, Washington, and potentially some New England states like Maine, Vermont, Massachusetts. And that this is going to be a long and slow process of building together all of these coalitions, but the example that has been made in Proposition 19 in California is very instructive regarding unions, Democrats with a capital D, former law enforcement officials, minority groups like the NAACP and Latino minority groups. Very, very important. And so all of this is in play. Normal has a legal seminar coming up in Key West in a little less than a month, which is part of Normal's ongoing process of trying to help criminal defense lawyers know how to best represent the 850,000 of our brothers and sisters who will be arrested this year on marijuana-related charges, 90% of them for possession only. So those are the two most important things on the calendar beyond what we do here every day, and that is still help the victims of prohibition, those arrested, those being prosecuted, those who are having to go through drug testing, those who are having their children taken away or being denied a student loan. All of that never abates in this process.
Yeah, we're going to keep fighting until it is fully legal for all of us. And even after that, we'll still be around to help marijuana consumers. Alan St. Pierre is the executive director of Normal and the Normal Foundation. And check out the Key West Legal Seminar by going to Normal's front page at normal.org. Alan, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks, Russ. Best to you.
Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back after a word from these 420 friendly sponsors. Wait a minute. This is internet radio. There are no dials here.
Ever wonder how often to change your bong water? The most effective method for making pot brownies? The best destinations for a ganja getaway? How to hide herb in your car? Whether to grow your own? How precisely to legalize it? Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place? Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times Magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook wove all of this collected wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more. This is truly, finally, the ultimate guide to green living.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 51 after the hour, and I'm going to start this rant with something that has nothing to do with marijuana or drugs at all. I had a completely different rant planned for the day, but when I saw this story pop up at the top of the Huffington Post, I knew I had to say something about it. So here it is. The headline here reads, Martin Erzinger, Morgan Stanley wealth manager, won't face felony charges for hit and run. All right, check this out. This is in Colorado, and the Colorado prosecutors are not going to charge him with felony hit and run because they don't want him to lose his job. Martin Joel Erzinger, who manages more than $1 billion in assets for Morgan Stanley in Denver, Colorado, is being accused of only a misdemeanor for allegedly driving his Mercedes into a cyclist and then fleeing the scene. Colorado's Vail Daily reports, the victim, Dr. Stephen Milo, whom Erzinger allegedly hit in July, suffered spinal cord injuries, bleeding from his brain, and, according to his lawyer, Harold Haddon, lifetime pain. But District Attorney Mark Hurlburt says it wouldn't be wise to prosecute Erzinger. Doing so might hurt his source of income. This is from the Vail Daily, quote, felony convictions have some pretty serious job implications for someone in Mr. Erzinger's profession, and that entered into it, Hurlburt said. When you're talking about restitution, you don't want to take away his ability to pay. We have talked with Mr. Haddon, and we have had heard their objections, but it's ultimately our call. Okay, so Milo, the Dr. Milo, the guy that got hit, he lives in New York City, actually. He was out there vacationing in Colorado. He's furious about the drop charges, the Vail Daily says. The doctor's line of work has also been threatened by the incident because the guy is a liver transplant surgeon. So the hedge fund man, the billion-dollar wealth manager, runs into the bicyclist who's a doctor who does liver transplants, causes bleeding from the brain, spinal cord injuries, and lifetime pain. But we're worried about the wealth manager losing his job. We're worried about the wealth manager losing a little bit of money. Now, in other news from Colorado, to bring this back to the radical rant and the subject of this show, medical marijuana grower Chris Barkowitz copped a 5-year plea deal to avoid life in prison. Because it was a federal case, he was forbidden from mentioning Colorado's medical marijuana law or any medical uses of the marijuana he was growing. Observers believe Barkowitz bragging about getting rich from medical marijuana to the local TV news crew was the primary motivation for the federal prosecution. So just so we're straight here, in Colorado, if you grow marijuana for sick people to use with their doctor's recommendation, and you might get rich doing so, you face life in prison. If, however, you grow wealth for rich people and run down a doctor and make him sick doing so, you get a slap on the wrist. Folks, this double standard in our judicial system just highlights how upset people are with the state of affairs in American courtrooms today. This is something that transcends Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative. I defy anyone to read that story of Martin Erzinger and not be offended to the core and repulsed by the notion that we have this system that says, oh, well, he's a rich guy, different rules apply. I think we're all a little upset by that. And I know we're upset by our justice system that feels like we need to lock up a good man like Chris Barkowitz, who never harmed anyone, but this guy who runs down a doctor on a bicycle and flees the scene doesn't deserve the same 5 years as Chris Barkowitz, doesn't deserve the felony record that Chris Barkowitz is going to have to live with. I'm afraid that's unacceptable. This is something I really believe that we should take a look at as marijuana law reformers. First of all, we've got Senator Webb in Virginia has the Criminal Justice Reform Act that he's pushing. And part of this is he wants to review our criminal justice system in whole and the terrible, you know, increase in prison populations and the disproportionate sentencing and the racism and so on, which is just another way of taking a look at the war on drugs without really saying so, right? You know, Senator Webb's not going to come out and say, hey, let's have a commission on the war on drugs. But if you can have a commission on prison sentencing, you can't talk about prison sentencing without talking about the war on drugs. In that same manner, we need to attack this double standard in the judicial system and the blatant hypocrisy and misdirection of our resources that would lock up for 5 years a marijuana grower while letting someone who does violent harm to someone knowingly and leaves the scene of an accident to get away with a mere slap on the wrist. We see this all the time. While I was in Oakland, there was a lot of commotion about the upcoming sentencing in the Oscar Grant case. Oscar Grant, young black man who was shot to death on a BART platform. BART's their transit system, subway. And got shot to death by a cop while he was face down. And I think he was handcuffed. I don't know if he was handcuffed, but he was definitely face down on the ground. And the policeman in the case said that he had meant to tase him, but instead of reaching on his left side where the taser is kept and is kind of square feeling, light and plastic, he reached over to the right side where his firearm was, a large 40 caliber handgun that's very heavy and cold, and you can definitely tell the feel difference right when you pull him. He just accidentally grabbed the right firearm instead of the left firearm and killed the guy. And I know Oakland rioted over this in the summertime when this verdict was first announced. And now the sentencing, I haven't gotten the latest updates from Oakland, but I know they're not very happy about that. There are cases like this all over the country, where we see rich people getting away with stuff that none of you and I could ever get away with, where we see instances of obvious racism on display, but no repercussions for the people involved with it. And now we can add to that the people who are legal medical marijuana patients, legal medical marijuana growers in their respective states that are being taken down by federal prosecution and this misdirection of our resources. We need to highlight this to the American people. To say, you really want to lock up the pot grower while we've got rapists running free. You really want to lock up the pot grower while Wall Street is getting away with your 401ks. You really want to lock up the pot grower while the bankers are laughing and your house is being foreclosed on. We need to tie the marijuana prohibition into every other argument there is in the political sphere. Believe me, I can do it. You name a subject, I can tie marijuana prohibition to it. We've got to let people know that this is not a fringe issue. This is an issue that gets to the very core of American rights and American justice, because it does. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here for the show. Toker Talk Radio coming up next here on the live podcast. And for those of you listening to the recorded podcast, we'll see you later. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
We love it. We love the earth.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it.